There was this whole long entering thing about turtles.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we discuss the Minnesota caucus. We talk about how we all went caucusing and how the caucus was a big mess. Caucus.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
I'm always here.
And Nick Glover.
Aww.
You live here, what? Tim. You can't. Well, of course you're always here.
I mean, on the podcast.
Oh.
He leaves sometimes.
I do. I left earlier today for a while.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was nice. It's a beautiful day.
How do you know we also left our houses another day in the past? That was a good segue. because this episode is all about caucuses and the recent Super Tuesday and our experiences caucusing and voting.
And not primarying.
Not primarying, caucusing. We were raucousing out with our caucuses out. We were. That's all I got.
It was a Super Tuesday caucus. Minnesota caucus.
So, which was 10 states for the Democrats and 12 states for the Republicans.
Yep. And we're in Minnesota, as you guys know, and Minnesota, actually, I was very proud of Minnesota, not just because they voted for, you know, my preferred candidate, Bernie Sanders, in large amounts, but also on the Republican side, they went with Rubio, which was great, actually, because it was not Cruz and it was not Trump. And the only way it could have been better is if it was Kasich.
Comparatively great.
Well, you know,
the Minnesotans chose to be punched in the gut instead of the balls of the face.
Right.
Yeah.
Instead of having a racist cut our dicks off, we decided to have someone just slap us real hard.
Trump finishing third is good.
I would have been happier if it had been Kasich. Yep, and Trump finishing third is good and makes me very happy about our state. The fact that even rurally he did poorly is good, because that also makes me happy. I just, I don't know.
A good friend of ours, Victor, lives up in the Iron Range.
Mm-hmm. He lives in Chisholm.
In Chisholm, Minnesota. Which it just sounds so close to Jism that it's just...
That's why you say Chisholm. You got to put the L in there.
Yeah.
Chisholm.
So it sounds
really dirty when you say caucused in Chisholm.
Yes, caucused in Chisholm.
He caucused so hard and that Chisholm
and
came out.
He's a delegate there now after the caucus.
There's
but
like no one there.
Yeah, actually, their turnout in his district was something like 140 people. And because... And so you're thinking, like, oh, rural Minnesota, Iron Range, 120 to 20 for Sanders over Clinton.
Yeah.
Because of the crazy, like, union backbone of the Iron Range, and just, like, those people up there are this weird libertarian slash...
Yeah.
Far left leaning liberal. It's weird. It's its own animal.
So Nick and I live in Eden Prairie, which is a large second tier suburb of Minneapolis.
Yeah. We're like 1.5 tier.
Oh yeah. We're definitely a second tier. We're almost a third tier. We're because Chanhassen's a third tier.
You're out there.
Yeah. Dine is a first tier.
There's one suburb between us and Minneapolis.
Yeah. So we're second. But and Tim is in St. Paul.
Yeah.
So you're in Ramsey County. We're in Hennepin. What's funny is I don't know how many precincts were being represented at your caucus.
Hey, Jeff, I don't even have an idea. There were so many fucking people.
In terms of, did you see the precinct numbers? Were they lined up anywhere?
Well, you know, they had the precinct numbers on a piece of paper on the wall, and I just don't remember. It was at least seven.
Okay, we had 23.
Wow.
If you count the, because a lot of them are divided into A's and B's.
Right.
So if you count 19A and 19B as distinct, which you should, there were 23 precincts reporting at our one place, which was the Eden Prairie High School.
Which was also the polling place for the Republican primary at the same time.
Yes, at the same time. It was, so my mom lives, you know, we all live really close to each other. We live about 3 miles from the high school. We left at 6 something or a little before 6 to get there, thinking we would just wait outside in line if they weren't letting people in. And when we got there, the parking lot was more than 3/4 full. A parking lot that's meant to hold a school that has like 8,000, 9,000 kids.
Bustling like a beehive.
Yeah, like crazy. And my mom left at 6:10 thinking that she would be really early. And she sat in traffic. It took her 40 to 50 minutes to get 3 miles.
Man.
Because of the traffic and people coming in and out. So I don't know how the Republican primaries are, but the Democratic caucuses are a messy nonsense mess.
We were talking about this a little bit before we started. I mean, the thing about caucuses is they are not designed to handle the kind of people that were turning up this year.
No.
And it hardly ever happens.
The amount of people.
Yeah. The last time I caucused, and a lot of this has to do with the fact that Pat and I had kids, and most of the time there was a caucus.
And you hate America.
Yeah, fuck America. But most of the time there was the caucus. Pat, I would stay home with the kids. Pat would go to caucus over the last several years.
Pat loves caucus.
She really loves caucus. So
Tim can take her leave caucus.
By the way, if you have a problem with Donald Trump making dick jokes, you're not going to like this episode because dick jokes all over the place. Anyway, so
I get it, caucus.
Yeah. So there aren't that many people that go to caucuses in an off-year election. There's almost nobody. The last time I caucused was the year that it was Bush versus Gore. And that was actually, from what I understand, a pretty high turnout because it was a presidential year.
You didn't caucus in 2008?
No, I did not. I did. That was the year that I stayed home with the kids and Pat went and caucused.
Yeah.
Your kids would have been not old.
Not that old. Yeah.
That's some good math.
Thank you.
Yeah. Solid.
It's really good.
That's solid.
Well, because for a second I'm like, Alex is 15?
16.
16? And the little one's 12?
11.
11?
Why, you might go so far as to say they would be about 8 years younger than they are now.
Yeah, that's the possibility. So, anyway, so that one with Gore, there was as many people there to caucus for Gore or...
Who else was going besides Gore? Who else was in the running?
Kucinich. Kucinich was the nominee for Minnesota
Kucinich.
That year.
But was it at this point when it got to us, was it down to two like it is this time? Because I know there's been...
No, it was... There were still a few people
There's
left.
Always way more Republicans running than Democrats.
But it was basically Gore at that point.
Well, I mean, so at the Democratic caucus just this year, there were 6 people on the ballot. I mean, how many of them are reasonable? Okay. How many of them are getting in?
Years ago, the year Obama ran, there was actually like 6 people.
But the thing is, on the ballot is one thing, but actually contending in the running, because Martin O'Malley was on our ballot, but he dropped out. He had dropped out a month ago.
Right.
So that was really weird. And then there was another person on our ballot,
but
I didn't even recognize
his
name.
Rocky.
Yeah. So that's the thing is like, I mean, yes, okay, on the ballot. But I mean, like, at that point, was it just down to Kucinich and Gore?
No, there were a couple other people. Okay. I don't remember who. But so anyway, the point is that they're not set up to handle this number of people. Most of the people involved in the caucusing system have never done it before. The people that they're tapping to like get everything together.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, everything I heard from basically everyone in the Twin Cities that went to caucus was talking about how completely disorganized
it was. What a glorious mess it was.
It was a complete mess. And I knew it was going to be. I knew it was going to be.
I think we should clarify our terms to the because we're not none of us are super politic nerds. I don't think. I mean,
I'm active and
I like to pay attention, but I'm not an expert, and I don't know if either of you.
I probably know more than either one of you.
But we should talk about what a primary election is and what a caucus is and how they differ, because in their most basic sense, they are accomplishing the same thing. They're selecting a candidate for the genital election.
Genital election.
Caucus.
That's what the caucus is.
Yeah. They're picking the candidate who represent the Democratic Party in the general election against the Republicans and whoever else got enough signatures to run.
I have factcheck.org's caucus versus primary.
Yeah.
In presidential campaigns, a caucus is a system of local gatherings where voters decide which candidate to support and select delegates for nominating conventions. A primary is a statewide voting process in which voters cast secret ballots for their preferred candidates. So caucus meetings generally are unique in that they allow participants to openly show support for candidates. Voting often is done by raising hands or breaking into mm-hmm. groups. So we kind of do a weird hybrid where you can go to caucus, which is you go into a room with other people from your party in your precinct mm-hmm. and have a conversation about who you think
try to sway the undecideds.
Yep. But then we also do a secret ballot where you mark down who you want. And then I believe that the way that the Democratic Party works is that it is a proportional number of delegates. So if Minnesota has, 77 delegates, it's supposed to be...
The state organization of the Democratic Party decides that for themselves.
So in Minnesota, the DFL, which is
decided that there would be a disproportional split.
Mm.
Because Bernie Sanders got 70% of the vote in Minnesota, and he gets 55% of the delegate vote, whereas Hillary Clinton will get 45% of the delegates, but it's because she came in second and he came in first.
Oh, so if there were more people, it would have been split even further.
Other states, it can be a closer to a 1-to-1, like, popular representative vote. But the state gets to pick that out because it's not, the government isn't deciding that. The party is deciding that.
Interesting.
And so it's, I think that's fascinating to me, is that so much of opinions of the primary versus caucus are thinking that it's like a government run thing.
And it's party run. And then the party decides whether they're going to hold a primary or a caucus.
Right.
And the thing is that a caucus in a presidential year, yes, there is a vote, but in most years it's all about party policy.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about local politics. There's a huge part of it that's people putting forward resolutions.
Yep.
And which
we had that this year with the Sunday liquor sales.
Oh yeah, we had fuck tons of resolutions.
There was one guy
that brought in like 15 of them. It was just like interminable.
But, there were also resolutions I heard of people saying that we should have a primary, not a caucus, which I find so great. Like using the caucus system to maybe bring about its own end is kind of amazing.
Sure.
That's democracy. I mean,
Yo, I love it.
I really love caucuses in theory, because I mean they're great for like bringing a resolution forward and saying, like, establishing, like you're saying, a policy or a platform for local politics, or not as nationwide, but it's for a presidential election or when there's expected huge turnout. I hate to say, like, man, democracy is such an inconvenience, I hate having a voice, but like the people,
better than three quarters of the people that showed up for my caucus, for my precinct, wanted to vote and leave.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Okay, so
yeah,
there was I stayed for the whole thing because I knew we were doing this episode, and mm-hmm. I was like,
we did not.
I wanna talk about the whole fucking stew, but the line, and I got there early, and Pat wasn't able to get there until later, so I got there and I was in the room. And Pat got there about 45 minutes after I did and stood in line for another 40 minutes.
Point of order, how much Crossy Leap or whatever it is did you play while you were doing your caucusing? And
Crossy Road? I played a lot of Crossy Road.
I was
going
to say, I imagine a lot of Crossy Road.
I played a lot of Crossy Road because, seriously, because once you get to the resolutions, and the thing is, most of the resolutions were completely reasonable, and it's like, yep, I agree. And, the idea is you read the resolution, and there's conversation, and then you pass it or you don't. But the problem is most of these people in the room don't understand what's going on.
Yeah.
So let me explain how this whole process works. Okay, people put forward a resolution, and what the resolution is something for the party platform. You aren't setting policy. What you're doing is saying, if somebody runs under the DFL banner, mm-hmm. they're saying that they are signing on to whatever the party platform is.
So I say, I want to put forth a resolution that we should allow Sunday liquor sales in Minnesota, which, by the way, listeners, we currently don't. And I want there to be Sunday liquor sales.
Right.
And so with that, if we agree to that, what we're saying is, in this precinct, we want to tell the DFL, our precinct says the DFL candidates should be on a party platform of Sunday liquor sales.
Right. And then what they do is you move up to the next level, which is a delegate, which is the state Senate level. Okay. So you move up to that next level, and then they grab all of these resolutions that came from all of the precincts.
All
that are
precincts.
in that group. And then they take the stuff that matches. So if they're like five different ones that were all proposing the Sunday liquor sales thing, but they all have different language, they're not going to take those. They're going to put them together.
Right.
They're going to create some language that's the same. And then they're going to say, all right, does everybody here from all these precincts that are now represented like this idea? And if everybody there says yes, it moves up to the next level, which is the House of Representatives level.
Yep.
And then it moves up to the state level. So, I mean, there are multiple levels that these things have to go through. And people don't understand that. So when somebody puts forward something and they're like, they're saying, you know, well, I would like us to commit to putting up to X amount of dollars towards this kind of thing. And then somebody said, it was just.
And people are like, oh, we can't make that an instant policy because of reasons.
Right.
And then, like,
so somebody's like, what happens if there's a horrible emergency? What happens if there's like an earthquake? I know that's not going to be, let me just.
This is why we're not policymakers. Let the policymakers, like Representative Mike Freiberg, decide.
What happens if there's this thing? And then what doesn't happen, because nobody in the room in this kind of a situation, because there's like five people that show up for caucuses in a regular year, and those five people are getting drowned out by all the people that don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
So there was one guy in the room who knew what was going on. He'd been a state delegate before. He happened to be a Morris dancer, so we knew each other.
Huh.
so they're trying to get their hand up and say, okay, we're not forcing any politician into anything.
Yeah, that's not
what this is.
This is
a party platform.
Yeah.
If it makes it all the way up to the state convention, it gets ratified there, it becomes a plank in the platform, but ultimately you can't force a politician to vote any way based on the party platform.
Now, this is where I think that there are a lot of good things about social media when it comes to politics. And one of them is that social media is a very effective tool at alerting people to caucus and primaries and telling them what there are and how to get out. But also, I saw a lot of viral posts going around where people would say, the caucus means that you can put together any resolution, and so please, at your precinct, put forth this resolution.
Yep.
And so I think that a lot of people were like, oh, and I even saw one post that was like, for Sunday liquor sales, it was like, if we all put forth this resolution, they have to do it. And in my head, I'm like, that doesn't mean it.
It means it's more likely to be a platform of the Democratic Party.
And if a person wants to run as a Democrat and wants the endorsement to be the Democratic nominee to run for an office, they kind of have to agree with the majority of these issues.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they risk losing that support.
Yeah.
Unless they're just the best person for the job and no one's going to vote against them. Like Paul Wellstone is a good example of someone who didn't necessarily agree with all of the Democratic party platforms, and in fact ran as a Green Party candidate for long enough where they were just like, nah, you got this, man. We got your back.
So, please correct me if I'm wrong, Internet, but it seems to me that, actually, Nick, you were wrong when you said that Republicans had a primary. It seems like
everybody had
caucus.
A caucus, I thought.
It's a state-by-state thing. So these are the states that currently have caucuses. Alaska, Colorado, Hawaii, Kansas, Maine, Minnesota, Nevada, North Dakota, Wyoming, and Iowa. Plus American Samoa, Guam, and the Virgin Islands.
But the parties determine that. State.
No, that's not what this says. This is factcheck.org.
It's saying
it says that's a state thing.
The government
that so the Republicans
that?
Had a caucus, And the Democrats had a caucus.
Right, but one could have had one and one could have had the other.
It doesn't seem that way.
The state legislature?
It seems like it's a different thing, so I'm going to try to find out that more. But
yeah,
again,
that's possible that the state legislature has to...
It's a decision thing, that it's not party-based.
I mean, here's the thing that's beneficial about caucuses in my mind. I mean, it's a pain in the ass, and I actually would like to go to more of them. I would love to get more involved, because I think... you can make an impact in a caucus a lot more than in a primary.
Yeah.
I mean, a primary is easier. You just show up, you flip a button, or you mm-hmm. color in a circle, and you're done. Yeah. A caucus, and they tried to make it easy for people who just wanted to show up and vote at the caucus.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed for a lot more than that, and there was a lot of it that was just like, oh my God, will you people just shut up? We're all...
Once you're in there, can you leave?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
Yeah. You can leave at any time.
Okay, I wasn't sure.
I stayed.
One of the reasons we didn't go was because we asked a few people, once we go in, do we have to stay until it's like completed, or can we leave at any time? And the answer was, I don't know, I think you got to stay. Or go into the room and then ask them. And I'm like, I don't want to go into the room I can't leave and then find out I can't leave.
Yeah, you see, and that's just ridiculous, because when you think about it, democracy is still volunteer.
Yes, but I could also see there being a thing where it's like, you have voluntarily entered this room.
Yeah.
And so now you are part of this caucus process that will take as long as it takes, and you can't go. That's why that's why this part is voluntary. Yeah. That's why you can vote and leave or enter the room of requirement.
You can leave at any point. And it's,
it's kidnapping if they don't. I mean, come on. It's,
and I don't it know. Was
so I like that it's messy, but it does allow people to have an actual impact on a party. So, you know, and Minnesota is a fine example. You know, I talk about back in 2000 when we were basically one of the only states that didn't vote for Gore mm-hmm. in the primary caucus. We voted for Kucinich.
Yeah.
And the reason is because Minnesota Democrats are super liberal, and Kucinich was super liberal.
Yeah.
And essentially, it was a message that Minnesota was sending that was like, yeah, we know Gore is going to be the eventual nominee, but we'd like to point out that there are liberals in this party who would like Gore to not be such a centrist.
Right.
You know,
which again is unsurprising, because that's what happened with Bernie Sanders here, because Hillary Clinton is a centrist. I mean, regardless of what people want to say,
I could have told you 6 months before the caucus.
Oh, yeah.
That if Bernie Sanders was still in it when it got to Minnesota, he was going to win.
So here's a funny story.
Minnesota's an odd duck.
Here's a funny story. It's a gray duck. Here's a funny story about when we got to the caucus. So we get to the caucus, and it's Eden Prairie. And for people who aren't from Minnesota, Eden Prairie is a very... I don't want to say it's a very posh suburb. It is a suburb of appearances. It is the suburb where... people have overspent. There are lots of big houses and big cars and expensive cars, but it's not really a place of wealth as it is a place of...
I think it's important to note that what was originally like a pilgrim...
Well, yeah.
You know, town in the
Eden
middle
Prairie
of...
and Purgatory Creek.
Yeah,
and all that.
It had rapid expansion in the last 20 years even.
Oh, yeah, 20. My parents moved out there... about 20 years ago, and it was a nothing place then.
Right.
And so, like a high end store will move into the mall, and then realize that actually no, people don't have a lot of money here. They have a lot of expensive stuff and not a lot of operating cash. It's a different kind of thing. So, that and Minnetonka, which is a wealthy suburb, and then some other, you know, nearby things had been brought to our place. So we get there, and it's lots of people in, you know, lots of young people, which is great because they're mostly Bernie supporters.
I think it's important to note, in the Eden Prairie High School, which this is the first time either as a part of a general election or any kind of election, this is the first time since we moved to Eden Prairie we didn't have to vote in the megachurch.
Our polling place is still the church.
Right.
That's our precinct's polling place. But
what?
Because, so we get in there, and Nick goes, oh, go, if you, I'll hold our place in line. If you want to, because we were in line apparently to look at a map, we didn't realize that. If you want to go over to the Bernie table and get stickers for us, I'm like, sweet. So I go over there. The dudes running the Bernie table I wanted to just like lean in and go, guys, like shower.
Yeah.
Wear nice. I mean, just like they were wearing old, loose.
A tie-dye Bernie Sanders t-shirt.
Like just rumpled dudes in rumpled clothes with unkempt beards.
Hey, that guy's beard was groomed.
One guy's beard was groomed. The other guy's beard was all wackadoo. And like, I mean, the Hillary table was one solitary guy, by the way. Not even a woman at the Hillary table. One solitary man.
Who was still setting up.
But still, yeah. Like, it was just, so I go over to get Bernie stickers. And I come back. And this, I'm going to say probably like 60 to 70 year old woman and her mm-hmm. husband in front of us. She sees us. And she kind of looks behind us, and there's more Bernie stickers, and she kind of looks ahead, and she goes, and she sees some Hillary stickers on some people, and she leans into her husband, and she goes, let's go get a Hillary sticker. And he goes, no! God, just no, we're in line. She's like, well, you stay in line, I'll get a sticker. He's like, you know what, just, I'm not putting a sticker on. And so, like, that to me just set the whole tone for the whole thing, because it was like, all the Bernie supporters were like, yeah, Bernie, I'm so excited. I'm really keyed up to talk to you about this and, like, and to show my support. And I didn't see a single young person wearing any Hillary stuff.
I did. Yeah, one or two. We're in the minority, definitely.
And that's great. I don't begrudge anyone their candidate choice.
What you're saying is that there was a very noticeable age divide.
Yes. And it was very much, it was like the campaign narrative of the Sanders campaign was being played out before our eyes, because it was like older establishment people who just want everything to stay how it is because they're fine. They're fine, Marie. I don't want a sticker. Just don't. And like, and then all these like young people who were like, I don't even know where to go. What's that map? Where do we live? Where's my, I don't even know. Which one's the mall?
I want a sticker. Like, I want a sticker. But here's the problem. I mean,
yeah.
You guys know, Bernie's my guy. I totally agree with him more than Hillary. I mean, there are super important things at stake, especially now that Scalia is dead.
Yes.
But the thing is that Bernie is popular with young people. But what concerns me is there's still way fewer people turning out for caucuses and primaries to vote for Bernie than there are showing up to vote for the Republicans. And that is a concern come this fall, no matter who gets the nomination.
So I'm assuming you saw the meme that was saying something like, here is the Super Tuesday turnout from 2008 when Obama was picked. And it was like 10 million for Democrats and like 5 million for Republicans. Here's the Super Tuesday turnout for this year. And it was, the numbers were basically flipped.
Yeah, but yeah. I'm not even talking about the
meme. Okay.
But
first of all, 2008, there were more Democratic primaries and caucuses held on Super Tuesday, and 2016, there were two additional states for the Republicans compared to the 10 for Democrats. So, like, and which states and how many voters those states have,
statistics,
I think...
Statistics, you fickle bitch.
I think that it's to say, like, I don't think enough people turned out is...
No. I'm saying I'm concerned.
Yeah,
I'm concerned that there are a lot of young people who seem to be supporting Bernie, but I'm not sure that they're showing up to vote for him. And the thing is that I'm not talking about that meme. Rachel Maddow did a good thing about it about 2 weeks ago before Super Tuesday, and she was talking about all of the, or maybe it was like a week, but anyway, she was talking about all the primary and caucus stuff that had been before that. The turnout for Democrats was percentage considerably less.
I wonder if it's states that don't, because I mean, obviously we are in a city, you know, a metro area with colleges.
She was talking about, like, look at Iowa in 2000, okay, in 2008, and look at Iowa today. And Democrats that turned out in 2008, Democrats that turned out today, Republicans that turned out in 2008. So she was comparing apples and apples.
Yeah,
statistically, Democratic turnout is down. And now, if you're a...
Was she comparing primaries and everything?
She was comparing state to state.
Yep.
So she's like, statistically, the turnout is down. That concerns me. And what concerns me also, and this happened with Obama too, you know, we all talk about how we're not happy with the political system, and the political system certainly is not perfect.
It will never be.
But it's never going to be perfect. No. And what happens is young people show up and they're excited about their candidate, and if their candidate doesn't end up being the guy that gets the nomination or the guy that wins, that's going to be it, and they're just going to walk away, and they're going to wait for the next guy that excites them.
So that sounds like a reason to choose Bernie Sanders to me.
Well, here's... I think there's great reasons to choose Bernie Sanders.
But here's what I think. So I think I genuinely do not think that Donald Trump is going to get the Republican nomination. Because the thing is, and everyone's like, well, they won't be able to help it. They won't be able to help it. And it's like, there are things they do. I think
that's precisely why the Democratic Party has superdelegates.
I know.
And they don't.
I know they don't. But I also think that there are, I don't know. That will be surprising to me. That would surprise me, to be perfectly frank. Not because I think someone else is going to get more states. I genuinely think that they're going to figure out something. Because right now, there are lots of people in rooms, white men, in rooms right now, trying to figure out what the fuck to do.
Some of them are Hispanic, like two or three.
They're like white Hispanic. Like the way Cruz is Hispanic.
Just... A few days ago, Mitt Romney filed the initial paperwork to run as a candidate.
What a fucking rube.
And Bloomberg has said that if Trump is the candidate, that he'll run.
So what I think is, okay, let's just say, so if it is Trump, I think that party's going to eat itself. They're going to have people who run as independents who are going to draw other people away. And I'm not saying I don't think it's a problem, but I do think that... if Trump wins a nomination, then I think that will galvanize the Democratic Party. The problem is right now, the people who identify as Democrats are feeling kind of undecided, a lot of them. There is a lot more undecided. Look at Massachusetts. Holy shit. Yeah. There's a lot more undecided than there were with the Obama election.
Sure.
Yep.
Because I think that he was more inspiring and less divisive and didn't have this weird Democratic commie tag hanging on him that like Jesus Sanders Christ. Does.
Obama's is so fucking moderate.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's moderate, but he's charming as fuck.
Exactly.
And frankly, as liberal as I am, I recognize that a moderate in the White House is safer.
And I will say this, I think that, and I don't mean this disparagingly, but I do think that a lot of well-meaning white people might have been like, you know what? We're going to do this. We're going to put a black guy in the White House. And they don't feel the same about a woman.
White guilt vote?
They don't feel the same about a woman because it's still not the same as a man. And also, Hillary has a whole lot of baggage that comes with her. And on top of that, Bernie... I have talked to rational people who will say, with no trace of irony, Bernie Sanders scares the shit out of me. And when I say why, they can't put a finger on it.
And it's socialism.
It's the same people who are like, I just don't trust Hillary. And it's like, why don't you trust her? And they don't have any reasons. Yeah. Now, I don't trust Hillary, but I've got reasons. Like, I've got plenty of reasons why I don't feel that way. I think this is going to be one of the most exciting elections, I think.
Well, I mean, the thing is, the primaries and the caucuses, they are not settled. As we record this, it's Super Tuesday 2.
It is.
Which is likely to be split again.
Yeah. Now, is it Michigan tonight?
It's the Super Tuesday that's orbiting Endor.
Yeah.
I think is what it is.
It's Michigan. Yeah. Michigan's the big one that's up. But, I mean, the Republicans, there's no certainty. The Democrats... Yeah. You know, Hillary's leading by a small amount, but not a ton.
And
we've still got like California, which I'm pretty sure is going to go strongly Bernie, and it's an all or nothing state.
Yeah.
You know, frankly, I think that's great because to me, it's like if we get through all of this and whoever comes out of it, and I may prefer Bernie, but be it Hillary or Bernie. Mm-hmm. I feel like whoever comes out of this,
#, I'm with them.
Yeah, because the thing is, they. I mean, no matter what everybody thinks about either one of them, personally, for the most part, when they're debating, they're both saying, "Look, we like each other. We may not agree on everything.
They're civil.
Yeah,
right.
That's the thing.
And they can disagree about policy, but they can be rational people having a discussion and having a debate.
I will say, the Republican debates are making me feel physically ill.
It's a farce.
A farce is in good fun. This is a fucking train wreck. Everyone's going with the whole thing of Donald Trump talking about his dick and everything. Yeah, that's awful. But the fact that, like, it was brought up as a talking point on the campaign trail by Rubio, I mean, referencing a comedian's bit to bring this up, it just, all of it is so awful. And they talk over each other and they interrupt each other. Donald Trump with the water bottle making fun of Cruz, I think, or Rubio sweating.
Cruz.
And he's, like, throwing water around?
So Stephen King, after the last debate, I think Stephen King
had this...
Yeah, the last Republican debate, sorry. Had this wonderful tweet that I just... It's so poetic and so true.
He's a good writer.
It's conservatives who for 8 years sowed the dragon's teeth of partisan politics are horrified to discover that they have grown an actual dragon. Oh, it's perfect.
That's the thing, is that the thing, Trump lowers the behavior of everybody around. I almost think he lowers the IQ of everyone around him.
That's why when someone was like, I can't believe Rubio brought it up. And I'm like, I can. At this point, he's got to do anything to get attention.
Yeah.
I absolutely can believe that he said, you know, he's got small hands. And you know what they say about men with small hands. They've got small ideas or whatever it was that he tried to, you know, like throw it off as whatever.
It was a disguised dick joke. But the thing is, and back to the initial point that I made, which is young people are super energized about Bernie, which I think is great. I don't honestly know who's going to end up with the nomination, Bernie or Hillary. It's going to be really close. And if Bernie gets the nomination, that's fantastic. If Hillary gets the nomination, that happens. And I hope that young people, whether or not they're happy or upset with the way it came down, stay engaged.
That's when people like us, honestly, people like us and those who are like-minded, turn the force of the machine of feel the burn to I'm with her. And turn it around to be like... And really point out the difference between Hillary and whoever the Republican nominee is.
That is where you start to really make that happen. And I mentioned it on our politics episode, too. To me, it's like, it is the Supreme Court, with Scalia dying, and the Republicans planning to block that shit, which is, by the way, bullshit. But
They're not even planning to hear it.
They're blocking it by basically not doing anything. Yeah.
It's not like they're listening and going, nah, they're not even showing up to listen.
You know, you elect a Republican while Scalia gets replaced with another douchebag, okay? So that's not so bad. Except we know that the judges who are most likely to leave next, one of them is Ginsburg. And if somebody gets in there and can replace Scalia with another conservative douchebag and Ginsburg with another conservative douchebag, we are talking about there's stuff going up to the court right now that has to do with right to choose that could easily go the other way if the balance gets tipped on.
I hate that. I feel like, for a number of reasons that we're not going to go into now because it's not what the episode's about, I really, really dislike and distrust Hillary Clinton, and I really do not want to vote for her.
This last debate was really rough.
I do not want to vote for her. I feel like I'm being blackmailed into voting for Hillary Clinton if she gets chosen as the candidate, and will I vote for her if she's the candidate? Yeah, but I feel like I'll resent her forever
now,
for
here's,
it.
Now, here's the thing, is I 2000 Molly would like to have a conversation with you. Molly from the year 2000 felt the same way about Al Gore.
And it didn't matter in Minnesota.
I know it didn't matter in Minnesota, but
it won't matter in Minnesota.
Exactly. That's my point. But so yeah, don't vote. It won't matter in Minnesota. But my point is, I felt the same way, and I voted my conscience, and it is awful to say. Like, it sucks to say I voted Green Party, and people are like, oh, so you're why we have Bush. And I'm like, I'm from Minnesota.
And they're like,
right, but people like you.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, no, you're right. People like me. You're right. Yeah. People like me that voted their conscience and wouldn't settle for a fucking, like, milquetoast centrist who I didn't think had any balls, who really just inherited the nomination just because he happened to be a good president. And I do think he was a good president. A good president's vice president.
He's the only president in the last, I don't know how many years, that actually eliminated the deficit. So
Clinton was a good president. He was just a bad person.
Well, yeah. He's like, a douchebag. Yeah, you know.
I don't know. There's a lot of bad shit about whatever.
You know, you can sit there and find good and bad things.
Yeah. I like Obama, but I hate a lot of the shit he's done.
Sure. There's a lot of shit Obama's done that I don't like at all.
I detest everything about his foreign policy.
Yep.
Basically.
Doma? Yep.
And
Obama, you mean?
Obama.
Yeah, Obama's foreign policy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interventionist politics and, I don't know, whatever.
Yep.
Well. But he was handed a shit sandwich, so who knows how Obama would have governed if he wasn't...
Hey, this shit sandwich tastes pretty okay, considering he really dressed it up.
Yeah, right, exactly. Anyway.
Anyway, well, so...
Yeah, but I mean, anyway, back to the caucuses.
Yeah.
It's like, the one thing that I think it's a really good experience, and I wish I did it more often. You know, I would have been a delegate to the next level if I didn't have something scheduled the same day that they had the convention. I'm like, I would love to be more involved in that process because I think it actually does. That's in politics.
Yeah.
What makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. We had, I was super thrilled and proud the next day after the caucus. I saw so many friends posting, not just about the participation, but about how I'm a delegate.
Yeah, they made me a delegate. Your mom.
And I'm going to be an election judge. Your mom's a delegate. My mom's a delegate.
My friend Lucas at work, who is my GOP friend, and who voted for Kasich, is a delegate for the GOP for Minnesota. I was like, cool. A rational person who votes rationally.
It was super endearing to see a lot of people that I consider friends and I respect furthering their participation and involvement in politics in our government.
Yeah, and I guess my challenge to anybody listening to this who showed up for the caucus, who was super excited about it, super excited about Bernie. And again, I would love it if Bernie gets the nomination. Mm-hmm. And I will go as far as to say I think he will be horribly ineffective as a president, and I don't care. I don't care
because you'll still depend a lot
because Republicans have a great track record of cooperating with Clinton.
I think it's going to depend a lot on the 2018 elections.
I think he will be it's not like he can ever get single payer to happen. It's not going to happen. Nothing he can do.
The more people say it won't happen, this is the thing that I hate about politics.
But that doesn't even matter.
That doesn't even matter. If he was in there, the conversation would happen, and it might not happen on his watch, but he could move it forward in ways that other candidates are not.
Like
going
we said
to.
In our politics podcast, it would be a signal more than anything.
Yeah.
It would,
And so that's my hope. But my secondary hope, maybe even a bigger hope, is the people that are getting energized by Sanders, no matter what happens in this election, don't just let it go and not do anything.
You get involved in local politics. You undo all the gerrymandering and you make it easier for Democratic people to get elected, because right now it takes 2 Democrat votes for every 1 Republican vote to elect a Democratic president. Just because of jury-rigging districts against Democrats, and that was all done on a local politics level. So being involved in local politics is super important.
Yeah, and gerrymandering is the House of Representatives, and that's a mess. But it's like, seriously, if Bernie Sanders got you out this year, I'm really happy to hear it. And what I hope is it gets people out next year,
or 2 years from now.
Yeah.
I hope personally,
because that's when Democrats don't show up. Yeah.
If you are listening from another country, I really want to hear what you have to think, like what you think about our process. How does it work in your country? How is it different?
How ridiculous does this sound?
Didn't even go through half of what happened.
I know, and I'm just really interested to hear, what do you guys think? Please tell us, if you're in a state that has a primary versus a caucus, let us know how a primary goes, because we don't know. We're in Minnesota. That was our Rockin' Caucus episode. 5 questions?
Yeah,
are we ready?
Let's do the 5 questions.
All right. I have 5 questions from Kelly Jones. Hello, I love the show. I listen to it religiously.
Smiles. Yeah.
I have been a Convergence attendee for the last 4 years, and I always make sure that no matter how drunk I am, I make it to the Geeks Without God podcast recordings.
So does Molly.
It's true. No matter how drunk I am, I'm there, guys. Drunk and or other.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. So, Kelly, you'll definitely want to make sure you show up to our recording at Convergence, and also maybe if you're in town, our 200th episode on April 16th.
Anyway, boom.
All right. Question one.
Question one is, what is a movie you'll stop and watch anytime it's on?
Any of the Harry Potter films. I grew up with Harry Potter, so it's nice to immerse myself in that world every once in a while.
I haven't read any of the books. I've seen all the movies a couple times. I like it.
The books.
I would, I'm sure. I just have other shit I'm reading before then.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited by all the American magic shit that she's been putting out in the past week. Have you guys seen that?
Yep.
J.K. Mm-hmm. Rowling talking about how magic came to America and the witch burnings and all that all ties into the wandless magic here and all mm-hmm. that stuff. I'm excited.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
All right. So question number two, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
My geekiest, most prized possession is my euphonium.
Euphonium?
I love making music.
That's yeah.
Pretty cool.
The fuck is euphonium?
Ah, shit. I'm trying to, shit. I'm going to look it up while you ask question number three.
Question number three, which supernatural, magical, or all-powerful being do you wish was real?
I wish that the old gods from Game of Thrones were real because trees are awesome.
Terrifying.
I like
trees
that.
Trees are awesome.
Yeah.
The reformed pagan in me loves the old gods in Game of Thrones. I love the idea of going to a grove of wirewoods and just, it's not meditating, but just sort of speaking aloud and thinking your thoughts and just getting back to nature and feeling
reconnected. I feel like there's so much that's unknown about the old gods that could be like inviting some
green seer shit.
There's probably some bad
some
shit that comes
Brendan
with the good
River
shit.
Yeah.
Cold hands.
By the way, euphonium is a little bit like a tuba. It's a smaller version of a tuba. Here's a picture, you guys.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
The euphonium.
It's the what's the thing that Madeline played? That's not a French horn, but a damn it, mellophone. It's the mellophone of
tubas.
Oh my god, right. She's gonna be like, no, it's not, you stupid fucking idiot.
Kelly, all right. Feel free to call me a stupid asshole.
Sorry, Kelly. All right, so question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that the world now faces?
Income and racial inequality. If religion were gone, this problem might even increase because there would not be as many people trying to help those less fortunate. Granted, some religious folks only do it to win points with the big man.
But, you know, helping the less fortunate from a religious perspective, I always think, well, all right, you know, soup kitchens are great. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with soup kitchens, but did a soup kitchen ever make somebody not poor?
No.
Well, here's the thing, but like Catholic charities and food shelves all that kind of, I mean.
Catholic charity.
I know.
You know, the people that think that like being in poverty is holy.
I'm just saying like, it would be interesting to know statistically if, and the thing is, there's no way to know statistically because it's like, are those people good without God? Like, would they still be giving? Would they still be helping?
Right.
Yeah.
Are they just helping under the guise of religion because that's what they think they're supposed to do? I mean, you know, we know for a fact that there's lots of us who are still good, you know, regardless of any kind of dogma.
Question number five, what is your favorite quote?
May not music be described as the mathematics of the sense, mathematics as the music of the reason? The musician feels the mathematics. The mathematician thinks music. Music the dream, mathematics the working life. James Sylvester, a 19th century English mathematician.
Huh.
That's nice.
Love the show. Kelly Jones, Minnesota Math Corps, math enrichment tutor at Susan B. Anthony Middle School.
Awesome. Uh-huh. Math.
Uh-huh.
Math.
Hey,
that's
Susan,
really great.
Right on.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yeah,
that's great. And we're sorry we didn't know what a euphonium was.
But we looked it up.
We did. On the show. We looked it up while we were talking so we could, you know, not sound do as stuff. Dumb.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to this episode that was mostly about caucuses. I want to let you know that Die Laughing is coming up. It's Die Laughing 3, and we will be recording there on April 9th at 4 p.m. We are recording with Fess and Melissa Kersher. Fess Works and Melissa Kersher have been a couple for a long time, and they have finally decided to tie the knot. They are doing so live at Die Laughing.
That's right.
With a multitude of ordained ministers.
Yep.
And we three are among those.
Yeah.
And then immediately after the traditional and legal and whatever marriage.
Total marriage.
Total marriage, we are recording with them. 4 p.m. on Saturday, April 9th.
April 9th.
And then, again, Saturday, April 9th at 9 p.m., we will be recording with Ariel Leaf. She is a theater...
She's a local theater performer, writer.
Yeah, she's an everything. Yeah. She's a theater maven, really. Yeah,
designer. She just theater.
She just had a baby.
Theater's all the shit.
And, we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff. So come see us live. Die Laughing has suggested donation of, I'm guessing, $20 at the door. To get in.
Yeah. We're donating a couple things to Die Laughing for their auction.
The online
silent
auction.
Online auction, so we'll have a guest appearance on our show, which if you listened last week, you know that you can bid on that, and we will be able to record with you no matter you are. If you're Australian, we could record with you.
We could, as long as you're willing to be up late and or early. Yeah. I don't know Australia time.
I don't know, but it'll suck for you.
And just so you guys know, we are once again doing a fundraising challenge. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
For Die Laughing 1, we raised money to both shave Tim and Nick's heads and be sent to a service at the Grace Megachurch.
That sucked.
For Die Laughing 2, we raised enough money to be forced to get Scientology audits.
That sucked too.
I still get so much junk mail.
He gets so much. And occasional fucking phone call.
You gave him money.
I
blocked their phone numbers on my phone. But
for Die Laughing 3. For Die Laughing 3, if we raise $1,000, we will go on a ghost hunting expedition.
A real ghost hunting expedition.
A real one.
Well, real in quotes. Okay. A professional ghost hunting expedition.
We are going on a ghost hunting tour with the equipment and everything, and then we will record a podcast about it. We'll see about maybe recording while we are doing it. I don't know about that.
I don't know if they'll let
us. We'll see if they'll let us, but we will definitely record immediately afterward, and you will hear whether or not one of us got possessed. I'm going to dare every ghost in the place to possess me.
You smell that?
We'll be all sticky with ectoplasm and other various fluids, and all it takes is $1,000 of your donations to Die Laughing to support Fearless Comedy Productions. Finally, we are recording our 200th episode.
Woohoo!
Oh. And technically, I think our 201st episode?
Yeah, I think it's going to end up being two episodes. Yeah. I don't know how it does.
Live at the Bryant Lake Bowl, April 16th, which is a Saturday, at 10 p.m. Our guests are Barb Abney and Jeremy Messersmith.
Yeah.
Those are some serious guests.
And some serious guest action.
We're up against also that night, but earlier in the evening, Night Vale is going to be at the State Theater. Well, that's sold out, Molly. It's well sold out. But here's the thing. Night Vale is earlier in the evening, and it's only going to be 2 hours long. And we're just a straight shot south of there.
If you really want to see some actual comedy, come down to where we are, and we're super funny.
When you're done with Night Vale,
Night Vale is subversive comedy. There's nothing subversive about what we do.
Yeah, suck it, Night Vale. I love your show, and I wish that we could talk to you, and I hope you do well.
We've been making dick jokes this entire episode just because we're talking about caucuses.
Take that, Cecil.
Yeah. God, I love him, though. So thank you very much. We have been Geeks Without God. You have been the audience, and this has been about caucuses, sort of, and also a lot about dick jokes.
Dick jokes.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, rate us on iTunes, rate us on Stitcher! And stay tuned, because we're going to be having big announcements coming up pretty soon in the next few months. So.
Yeah, big deal. Big shit. Stuff happening.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
From the great beyond.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think you just, you grab this paper, and then you vote.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
There was a cat that was pushing to come in, but it never did.